When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
SpinQuest Social Casino. The presents are open and you're over the in-laws. It's a perfect time to grab your phone and play SpinQuest.com with live dealer blackjack, craps, and a ton of slots. And here's a great deal for the holiday, a $30 coin pack for $10. And if you're hearing this ad, you can play right now on SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, welcome to a new episode of Realpolitik. I am your host, Firas Madad. I'm joined today by a very special guest, Peter North, Northern Variant. You all know him on X, you all follow him. One of the most astute commentators on British politics on the right, and always very, very realistic, to the extent that he upsets some people by being too realistic. And that's why I thought it's very important to hear from him, understand his perspective, learn from him, and see what he has to say. Pete, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Tell me a little bit more about you. You don't exactly fit as an ethno-nationalist, and you don't exactly fit as a civic nationalist. Tell me a little bit about the evolution on your thinking on the question of nationality. Because I know at some point you were closer to the civic nationalist position.
Yes.
But you are also not a pure blood and soil ethno-nationalist. You're right. Somewhere in the middle. Help me understand this, please.
I'm not 100% sure I do understand it myself. This okay. is part of the self-analysis that I've put myself under for the last couple of years. The thinking I was doing was along the lines of what is the actual difference between ethno-nationalism and civic nationalism in policy terms. Now, take civic nationalism. This is predicated on some notion of civic identity and these British values. Well, who defines what those British values are? Mm-hmm. And assuming we could have that debate and agree on something, well, these British values are going to be contemporary, they're going to be liberal. And so then if you take it upon yourself to define these values as the basis of your society, then it requires two things from you on a policy basis. You have to demand certain sacrifices of incomers, mm-hmm. that they buy into your civic identity, and that you defend those values robustly. Mm-hmm. And these are the two things that the multicultural state is not willing to do. Mm-hmm. And so in order to enforce these kind of things, you say, if you're coming in from the third world, you leave your third world cultural practices at the door. No, you can't wear a hijab. No, you can't eat halal. No, you can't do... You set what you believe in because, you know, British contemporary mindset is we don't like animal cruelty. We want our women to have the same rights and freedoms as the rest of us. We want gays to be able to live their own lives according to their own needs and desires within the law. This is the basis of our modern liberal society. But of course, though Britain is predicated on these liberal values, liberalism is dying. Mm-hmm. So you then get a situation where the civic identity based on these liberal ideas is a gulf away from where the people actually are. And in fact, we're already there. There is already a massive gulf between what ordinary working class voters think and where the progressive liberal Blairite Labour Party is. And the two now actively despise each other. Mm-hmm. And so there's no basis for a civic contract there. And so I then started thinking about how you would further enforce this civic nationalism. You would have to shutter the mosques that are preaching radical Islam, which is rather a lot of them. You would have to expel the 40,000 or so on the terror watch list. You know, ban halal, do all these inherently authoritarian things, which would be authoritarian in the defense of liberalism. Mm-hmm. And when you actually look at remigration strategies put forth by the ethno-right, the two are remarkably similar. They are 95% the same. Now, so where I start veering towards the ethno-right is when civic nationalism was being mooted, it was around 2003 as a replacement to multiculturalism, because it was the debate was very much around multiculturalism has failed even then. And it brought about authors like Melanie Phillips and her London Istan book. And quite a lot of the commentators at the time were all saying multiculturalism has failed. We need a replacement for it. And at the time, the BNP was rising and this was the politics that was beyond the pale. So we needed a mechanism that people, ordinary people, could buy into and see the logic of. And civic nationalism in its own right is one that seeks to be fair to the outsider, to bring them in, to call them part of our family, our national collective, and to create a framework where everybody's operating on the same page. And superficially, that's fair and that's right, and that's where I'd like to be. That's Britain's character in terms of our generosity, but there comes a point where the scales start to tip, where you have third world migrants arriving in this country. They move to the cities where the economic opportunities are, where there are people who speak their language and practice their faith. So they integrate in with their own. Their offspring go to schools where their children are not immersed in British culture, because they're not among British people.
Yes.
And so you can have your confected rituals of teaching your pupils how to sing all verses of Jerusalem and sing God Save the King in assemblies. But to be truly integrated, and we did have integration. I remember growing up in Bradford, I would say about 10 to 15% were Asian students, pupils. They'd be Muslims, they'd be Hindus, Indians. And they would become our friends. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a choice because they were outnumbered and they had to adopt our slang. They had to watch the same television programs, not least because there were only four channels, but they were being immersed in British culture, not just the bureaucratic definition of British values.
Yes.
teaching Britishness as a module in an education curriculum. You really have to be around British people to understand it. And that was possible around, you know, 1990 to the year 2000 at that particular rate of immigration, because I think the 91 census still has us about 95% white. That starts to radically change. And as I say, kids from migrant families are growing up with very little exposure. The only actual white British person that they'll meet are the four or five remaining kids who go to that school, either because their parents don't particularly care enough to get them out of there, or they're too poor to move, because generally, as a rule, anyone who can get away does. This explains white flight. And this isn't... this is just human nature. People seek out their own kind. We are gradually abandoning our cities, moving to the shires. You're seeing the population of North Yorkshire expanding because it's people moving away from Bradford and Leeds because they're seeking the safety and the familiarity of their own people. Same as foreigners coming into this country will go to the cities where they can find their own people. So you're getting to the point where there's nothing left to integrate with, and as such the integration process that was happening is now in reverse.
Yes.
And you're now starting to see there was a time when the Pakistanis were starting to integrate into Bradford. They would drop their Punjabi shop signs and you'd see an anglicization of Pakistani culture in Bradford, and you believed it was possible on a long enough timeline. But now that's not happening. They're reverting to wearing the ethnic garb of their home country, speaking and actually campaigning in Urdu at general elections. And I noticed this. I was at a new... I think I was speaking or attending a new culture forum meeting in Newcastle. I thought, I'll make a day of it. So I went up and had a drive through Sunderland on the way because never been, thought it'd be nice to take a look. And this was just before the general election. And what I expected to see in Sunderland was rows and rows of Labour posters in windows because it's a traditional Labour stronghold, working class area.
Sorry, what year was this?
Last year.
Last election.
Yeah, and I would have expected, even in its current state, I would have expected to see the odd Labour poster or billboard here and there. Or maybe Reform even. But actually, the reality, no outward sign there was even an election happening at all. But you drive the drive down the Great Horton Road in Bradford, and it's a sea of electioneering, and it's all, every single poster, billboard has got a candidate and something about Gaza and the Palestine flag. And this is this alien politics that's growing up in our cities. And so this is the beginnings of Ulsterization.
Yes.
We are seeing the fragmentation, this great melting pot that we were promised by Tony Blair and a little bit before that, all the dogmas about, you know, we're all essentially British. We're not. And this is all of this was based on a conceit, and it was a conceit that we went along with out of politeness because it is in our nature to be generous.
Yes.
And we still want to be that way. We still want, but we can't be. Because you start bumping into the reality that not only are they not integrating, they don't want to, and even if they did want to, they couldn't. So this puts me outside of the realms of civic nationalism because I no longer believe that a viable civic identity can be established that everyone will buy into, because it will demand of white English people that they give up something of their own identity in order to accommodate foreigners. But that would only work if foreigners were also willing to give up something of their religious and ethnic identity in order to form this mythical
melting pot
utopia. It hasn't happened. It's not going to happen. And so you are seeing manifested in the politics, increasingly you see ethnic minority enclaves electing people on an ethnic basis to do with issues in Gaza or their home countries, and they come to Parliament to lobby for things in their own ethnic interest. They come to Parliament to lobby for a new airport in the back hills of Pakistan. And so my Parliament, our Parliament, has become this internationalist arena for ethnic grievances, gripes and agendas. The only
sort of United Nations instead of a British Parliament.
Yes, essentially. And where we're getting to now is everybody, I noticed, I don't know her name, but just a couple of weeks ago, a black Caribbean MP sitting there in her ethnic garb, standing up talking about reparations. And it's like, I'm just thinking, oh, we're on the hook again, another immigrant community with a handout. And then I look at this and think, well, who is the ethnicity that is not represented in this parliament? And of course, it's the white English people, because you've got the Lib Dems, who will always go to bat for foreigners. White English people are at the absolute bottom of the list of any priority for Labour, Lib Dems, and to a large extent, the Tories. And I just kind of think for some reason, this is permissible for ethnic minorities to form their own ethnic voting blocks, their own enclaves, their own power bases, their own agendas, their own lobbying bases. Mm-hmm. So we get foreign funding coming in to places like Tower Hamlets and Bradford, funding certain international agendas. We need to be alert to this. This is national security threat kind of thing. And yet, this is permissible, and it's all part of diversity and multiculturalism, and we're supposed to welcome all of this. It's a bit of diversity upon. But, of course, it subordinates our own politics and our own ethnic interests.
And subverts them.
Yeah, yes. And I never wanted... I've always been suspicious of blood and soil ethno-nationalism because it is the gateway to a darker politics. And if I'm in a room full of ethno-nationalists, not all of them are bad people, not all of them have got ugly politics, so just people who have arrived at that position through the same logical process I have. But if you walk into that room, you're in the company of some dark politics, some places that you wouldn't necessarily want to go. I've certainly noticed there's a seam of quite vicious anti-Semitism that just it just creeps me out, to the extent that the more right wing and doctrinally pure the ethno right gets, the less I want to have anything to do with it. But I don't see anything intellectually coherent about the current civic nationalism. So I occupy the space in between that doesn't actually have a definition.
And well, I think it's just the sensible center. And forgive me for interrupting you.
Yeah.
For somebody from the Middle East, what does being British mean? It means somebody who's descended from British people.
Yes.
It means somebody with British ancestry. What does somebody Chinese mean? Somebody who looks Chinese, speaks Chinese, is Chinese. Mm-hmm. And these things to the rest of the world are extremely self-evident. You look at East Asia, the level of racism within East Asia towards other East Asians is off the charts. You look at the religious nationalism of India or Pakistan, and again, it's completely off the charts. These are peoples that have very clear definitions of who they are. And they are, in a very real way, the universal norm. The West has adopted Americanism mm-hmm. to a very large extent as a sort of melting pot, as a sort of come from wherever.
Yes, all but that Western countries are built on immigration, which of course
which is absolutely nonsense, which is absolutely factually nonsense. But that Americanism was primarily aimed at white Europeans. Yes. If you were a white European Christian seeking, and Christian played an important part of it, although Jewish was also part of it as well. If you were a European Christian, you were welcome to leave the baggage of Europe's wars and come to America. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it included shrines to Vishnu or Krishna or anything of that sort. It was predicated on a shared system of beliefs that, okay, we have our ethnic and language differences, but the moral framework is Christian.
Well, America, of course, is built on a philosophy.
Yes.
There is an underlying philosophy that everybody bought into, and part of that goes is, you know, free markets and commerce, the land of opportunity, freedom. It's built on the idea of freedom. So that civic identity is it's wrapped up in the dollar sign. Everybody coming to find their own part of America and, you know, put their stake in the ground and build something around it. Mm. And of course, it's a country that's big enough for that to happen. And so you did have Amish settlements, and you could even have an Indian settlement somewhere in the, because it's big, vast country with. It's interesting how exclusively American sports events are still called the World Series.
Yes.
The World Championship of a sport that's only played in America, because America in itself is a contained world.
Yes.
And it's one of the reasons America doesn't really play by the same trade rules, trade FTAs, as Europe does. Because America's a country that's sitting on so much of its own reserves of everything, from oil through to minerals, its own talent, its intellectual resources. It does not need trade in the same way that a little island moored off the coast of Europe does.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.